Welcome inside the Coach's Room, the number one podcast for football coaches that want to develop. Every week we talk to elite coaches and backroom staff to hear about their experiences, how they develop, and how they develop their players.
You know, one of my lines is, you know, lead from inside. That idea that actually it's about being connected to ourselves and our own values and our own sense of purpose and legacy that will shape the kind of leader that we are within a group.
In this episode, we talk to James Kerr. James Kerr is the author of the legendary and best-selling book, Legacy. This book describes 15 lessons on why the All Blacks are the most successful team in sports ever. We discuss leadership, performance culture, and how you as a coach can influence all these characteristics of a team. Enjoy this episode with the wise James Kerr. James, welcome inside the coach's room.
Thank you. It's good to be inside this room with you.
I think you are even a more experienced podcaster than me, because if I look you up online, there's more videos of you than me.
Can't shut me up.
Yeah. And before we started, you are, let's say, in a hectic phase, or in a busy phase, maybe that's a better word.
Yeah, I am in a busy phase. You know, a lot of my work in the consulting and the advisory sort of space and the coaching space is around connection. And of course, you know, we've lived in the socially distanced world for a long time. And I think what we're all experiencing a little bit is that coming together, the congregation and the connection and the reconnection, not just with each other, but also with whatever it is that idea of ourselves that we had before. We've been through this huge reevaluation. So a large part of my work at the moment with teams across sport and military and businesses, you know, is how to reconnect, how to reboot and re-galvanize to kind of put the past behind us and move on to the next level. So, you know, I've been pretty hectic, I guess, doing that in a good way. I love it.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah, because I send you a message. Now you're in your office in the UK, I think.
Where in the UK, in London, yes.
Yeah. And when I send you a message, you say, no, I'm writing a book, but I'm in Bali. So that feels like world-like.
Yeah. No, it's the dilemma of my life is being pulled between the sort of the studious desk work of writing and the travel and the transit lounges and the kind of the external and extrovert work of speaking and coaching and consulting. So I have a constant tension in my life trying to buy space and buy time to write.
Okay, well, I appreciate it even more that you have found the time for us.
Pleasure. It's a real pleasure to have a chance to have a chat.
Great, great. Well, I heard in some other podcasts, it's okay to be a writer, you have to have an interesting life. So I can imagine also if you want to be, let's say, a writer and you want to talk about interesting organizations, you have to go out to meet them as well. And otherwise, there's nothing really to write about.
Absolutely. You know, you need a terrible cliche, but you need, you know, skin in the game. You know, it's you know, I like to get involved with, you know, groups striving for something. Yeah. Because it's easy to talk theory, but it's much more difficult to gain experience, I think, and speak from experience. So I try to make that a part of my practice. And okay. You know, I love it. It's not like I'm having to do it. I'm drawn to it.
What came first, actually? I can imagine it started with the book, and then you were requested to be an expert somewhere, or the other way around?
Well, kind of. I came up actually as a writer through advertising, through the advertising industry. I was a advertising creative, but somewhere along the line, I ended up doing a book on the Australian Rugby League team many, many years ago now. This is very early in my career. Yeah. And I think my impulse to write the book on the team was a bit, well, it came from the writing point of view, was that this sounds like an interesting subject. But of course,
the team
is one of the great teams, and particularly at that time, was an exceptional high performance environment. And I became intrigued by leadership and coaching within that high performance space. And so I've always combined the two.
Okay.
And really, it's been a coming together of my kind of desire to storytell in a way and to write, and the need of great groups to have a story, you know, to have an ethos, to have a narrative. You know, what do we play for? Why does it matter? What do we stand for? What won't we? Where are we going? Some of those, I guess, ethos, narrative, cultural questions started to really intrigue me. And also around the realm of leadership, you know, what does it mean to be a leader, especially today? You know, in a world that doesn't support power structures, how do we create huge amount of influence and common cause in our groups? So all of those really have fused together in the kind of work I do now.
Where does that interest come from? Were you, let's say, a small boy alongside the pitch watching the great teams play and go, how do you do this? Or
well, alongside the pitch. I grew up in New Zealand, right in the middle of the countryside, in the high country of New Zealand, the Mackenzie country. Shout out to Lake Tekapo. You know, population just about zero at the time. And
so, like mine, I come from a village from 300 people.
There you go. And so, you know, you have a lot of time to kind of kick around and live in an imaginary life, I guess. And this will date me, but my first, I remember the lunar landing, and I remember Liverpool playing Newcastle in the 1974 FA Cup final. And I used to have three posters on my wall in New Zealand. I used to have the All Blacks, the New Zealand rugby team. I used to have Liverpool and Kevin Keegan specifically. And I used to have a skier called Franz Klammer, who was the great downhiller, the Der Kaiser, who won the 1976 Innsbruck Olympic downhill and Grand Manor. And they were my heroes. And through writing, really, through storytelling and through my work, I've been able to ski with Klammer, and to write a book and embed with the All Blacks, and to spend some time with Liverpool and help them shape their story. So I guess I did stand on the sidelines in a way, but a very mediated sidelines from about as far away as you could. But I was always really intrigued by the what goes on inside, I think, those groups. And you know, one of my lines is, you know, lead from inside.
Yeah.
You know, that idea that actually it's about being connected to ourselves and our own values and our own sense of purpose, I guess, and legacy, that will shape the kind of leader that we are within a group. And so that inside story goes inward and inward and inward in a way, becomes the realm of psychology and cognitive neuroscience and the way human beings tick and work. I think in a way is the coach's real work, you know. The rest is just tactics and technique.
Sure. No, I completely agree. We have a lot of discussions so that the reason why you're coaching or the way that you are coaching is completely connected to who you are as a person and what drives you. You cannot fake it either.
You cannot fake it. And, you know, in military leadership, Field Marshal Slim, one of the great leaders in British military, you know, leadership, sort of the battle for Burma and so on, he said a line that's something like, you know, leadership is just plain you. You know, really implying a lot of things, exactly what you're saying, that you can't fake it. It's authentic, you know, that your authentic being will come through. That there is a question of character in many ways, and character is some of it. I think is intrinsic. Is you know what, where we were thrown into life, how we were born, you know what we the personality traits, but there are some aspects of character that you can develop, and a lot of developed because of the environment in which you're in. So there are two aspects of that. If you're a coach, you know, how do you create an environment in which character is recognized and rewarded above and beyond function and role? And character becomes about contribution, it becomes about integrity, it becomes about commitment, it becomes about being a good teammate or team member. It means putting your hand up when you're screwed up. It means speaking truth to power, it means being aware of your own impact on the environment around you It means wanting to bring out the best in the people around you. And all of those character questions have become hugely powerful, because the character that we show, I think in many ways, both collectively and individually, either bring out the best in us or they don't. So there's a performance aspect to it. It's not just being a Boy Scout.
Yeah.
You know, it's a performance aspect. Are you preparing, are you optimizing your ability by the way you behave? I think becomes a hugely important question. And it's not about the way you behave, be a good boy or girl. It's about, is that optimizing your chances of success? Is it about optimizing the moment? Is it about being humble enough to recognize that you work as part of a team, and the way you work with that team will shape that team and also your ability to operate in that team to the best of your ability? So, you know, what qualities do you bring to a team? I think are hugely important questions, and not always asked. But you can see, you know, you just need to look at the recent English Premiership season to realize what happens when some of those characteristics, let's say, of a high performance environment begin to fall apart off the field, and what happens on the field. I'm not naming names, but I'm sure everyone can read between
them. Well, everybody has some examples.
Well, everyone has that team anyway, but in every league, I think, and sure. every part of a sort of a cycle, it seems, there become these kind of moments of function or dysfunction. And I think one of the things I'm really interested in, there's the Tolstoy Anna Karenina effect or factor, which is Tolstoy wrote in Anna Karenina, words to the effect of, I'll misquote it, but every family is unhappy for its own reasons, but every happy family is happy for the same reason, or words to that effect. And I think it's very true of teams. I think there are plenty of ways that teams can fall apart. You know, there's a sense of unfairness in the room. You know, there are genuine kind of political grievances, or somebody, you know, made a pass at somebody else's partner, or there's genuine jostling for position, or, you know, whatever. There's a lot of things, or a personality difference between coach or manager or whatever. But actually, all good teams tend to be good for the same reason, or the same reasons. There's a team first philosophy. You know, we are investing in the team. There's a sense that actually there is a climate in the room, in the locker room, and of humility and good humor. You know, if I put it in English terms, people can take the piss out of each other in a safe environment. Yeah. There's laughter. There's honest conversations. You know, the All Blacks say, stab me in the belly, not the back. You know, good teams, the conversations that need to take place. The difficult conversations have been had. There's clarity of intent. You know, we know what we're playing, why we're playing, and we've all bought into it. All of those factors are very similar for good teams, you know. And then, and I think there's a reason, because, you know, we've evolved as a species over millions of years. And one of our competitive advantages as a species is that we hunt in packs. Yep. You know, human beings are able to think of ideas, communicate those ideas, and work together on making the ideas true. And that's one of the main things that sets us apart. We have opposable thumbs.
Is that also the role, that last part, is that also the role for the leader or the coach?
To galvanize, to bring together, yeah, to create common cause, to set standards, to create clarity of philosophy. You know, in football, you'd talk about, you know, kind of a playing philosophy, if you like. Yep. But there's a playing philosophy, and then there's a team philosophy as well, and ethos. And ideally, they're sort of part of that same mix. You know, a team that feels for each other, you know, has a sense that we are one, and we're going to go out there and, you know, there's a military thing. You know, you don't die for your flag. You die for the person in the foxhole beside you. So genuine sense of cohesion and common cause. And those things are simple to talk about, but not necessarily easy to achieve.
For for most coaches, I think they've all been in that process, and some of them are already able to create it. But I think for every coach that has been in, let's say, a winning streak, which kind of enhances the process because you're trying tend to get to stick together more because there's some form of success.
Yeah.
And then I think the hardest part is realizing this when there's no winning, because
I think the two hardest parts is when there's no winning, or when you've just won something big
afterwards,
the season before, the win after winning thing too, I think can be really challenging. But when you're not winning, how do you maintain that sense of you know, the reality is professional football is a lot of games. You know, it's a relentless roulette wheel of you know, next. And the more successful you get, the more you play. You go to Europe, you go higher in Europe, your legs get tired, your bench gets thinner. It all blurs into one. So even being successful can have its challenges like that. Is how do you create meaning for when you've got 50, 48 games or 45 games or whatever it is you play in a season, you know, and each one is supposed to be significant. So there is another challenge about that. And I think all of them are challenges of meaning often. You know, how do you make it mean something? How do you make this particular game or this particular quarter or the final third or these moments in the season significant and meaningful? And I think I think there's two aspects to it, probably. One is, you know, the only thing that is important is now. Trust the process. Focus on now. Devote yourself to this moment all the time. Don't try to motivate yourself by some big narrative. It's about presence and intensity and intention, you know, and maintaining a very mindful present mindset around that. But I think at the same time, you always have to have that future focus. You need to be able to change to that big picture. I think anyone who thinks that you can stay in the now all the time is crazy, because you can't. We joggle between past, present, and future all the time. It's about our ability, I think, from a mindset point of view, to control where we happen to be at the right time. But then the big picture, you know, what is this part of? How do we fit into the story of the club? Or what is the story that we as a group of human beings who are thrown together for this season, what do we want to leave behind? What do we want to leave out there? Or it's a local derby. What does it mean to the fans? Or it's just, it's a chance to prove that you belong at this level sometimes. So there are many different aspects of narrative and ethos that I think can be brought to bear to do that, to get you through the hard times. But, you know, sorry, a very long answer to this. But no. I think the other interesting thing about hard times is they, of course, are the times that can make you, and shared adversity. If you look at special force selection in any country in the world, whether it's the Navy SEALs with Hell Week or the SAS with, you know, the fan dance or just about anything. It's all about going through adversity together. And there are two aspects to that. One is that adversity reveals character. We talked about that before. It's when times are tough, the tough stand up kind of thing. And the second is when a group of people have shared adversity together and come through the other end, as long as they've come through reasonably intact, they come through a lot stronger. And we know that. You know, you look at Leicester City the season before they won the Great Escape, it was called.
Yeah.
You know, I think they came together as a group, not winning. They came together, you know, as a group, not losing, not getting relegated. And they became very, very tight as a group. And then there were a lot of circumstances the next season, etc. But that was a hugely contributing factor to it. So I think, coming back, I think, to the gist of your question, it's like, how do you manage that particular ground truth at that time, whether you're winning or you're, when you've won too much, you've lost too much, you're playing too much, you're losing. It's like, well, what is that narrative that is most going to galvanize this group?
Yeah.
You know, what do we play for? Because I think I said, I wrote in my book, you know, the more you have to play for, the more you will. And, you know, and I think one of the challenges of the modern coach is extracting meaning from, you know, professional football. It's still, I say this with the greatest respect, just a job.
True.
And it can become a job. And it can become its, you know, okay. And, you know, sometimes the rhythm, you know, turn up with your wash bag.
Yeah.
You know, strength and conditioning.
Yeah, it's,
you know, you're on there for training.
Sure.
Someone tells you what to eat, right? You finish it, you shoot a bit of pool, you're off playing Call of Duty for the rest of the day. 2 days later, you're traveling again. It's another airport. You know, I think extracting meaning becomes hugely and more a manager, a coach's role, or it always has been, but it's not going away.
Coaches, most coach education is very boring. The best way to educate yourself is to talk to colleagues. Sit inside a coach's room and just talk football. Put your challenges on the table and talk it over. And this is exactly what we want to do with the coach's room. Every month, we host coaching meetings. A pro coaches room specifically for professional coaches and a grassroots room for grassroots coaches. In our meeting rooms, coaches from all over the world come together to meet each other, to share knowledge, and to develop together. If you want to join these meetings, join our community. Go to our website and sign up to become a member. Once you are a member of our community, you can join the meetings, you can connect with coaches from all over the world and exchange experiences. See you soon in one of our coaching rooms. Should we as coaches more create that meaning in adversity, maybe more? So for example, maybe I'm making it very superficial, but you're giving a very concrete example for the Marines. They go through a hell week and they go through a very clear process to select and then the best stay there. In football, sometimes you hear a coach, yeah, we the coach took us to a forest and we couldn't shower for 3 days. Yeah, and at the end of the season, yeah, it kind of helped us.
Yeah. I think there's a huge amount that can, because I think it is that adversity moment. The problem is often time. You know, taking
priority
it, you know, and prioritizing it. But I'm a big fan of that kind of work. It could be a military thing. It could be a, you know, cross a glacier. It could be a, you know, but you know, again, within football, I think what can happen is that it becomes very siloed around just football. But there are and therefore very, you know, okay, you know, at 10:30 we're out there and we're kicking a ball around for 90 minutes or whatever, and it all becomes about the measure, and medical becomes really important, and da-da-da-da, and tapering, and, you know, and so it becomes quite technical to a degree and quite methodical and quite routine. But high-performing teams, I think, are really learning environments, right? Now, you learn through that training. But actually, by finding other, you know, the way we learn is through kind of novelty and reflection, actually seeing things through a different perspective. So I always remember there's a guy, Steve Black, who sadly passed away not long ago. He worked a lot with Newcastle. He worked with many different teams as a S&C and a mental skills coach. But he would tell me about taking, I think it was Newcastle, Premiership team to art galleries, and they'd be going, you know, what the, you know, what, you know, what's all this?
You can swear.
You can swear. What the fuck? What the fuck? You know, what are we doing here? You know, what have you brought us here? And they're all sort of milling around. But the discomfort of being slightly out of the zone, that they started to enjoy it, and they started to get together and talk about stuff in a slightly different way. And anything I think that can get, you know, that can get footballers talking is a good thing. Get them talking in a room, connecting, taking it beyond that. You know, if you think about the classic stages of team formation, there's, you know, there's form, storm, norm, and perform. Yeah. You know, a lot of teams only really stick in a social sense, they really only form often.
True.
Now, they might sort of storm out there on the field. They might, the thing, you know,
maybe there's a storming phase when the season starts.
But, you know, but actually, if you can really have some committed conversations and take people outside, you know, rather than how's the kids and no one knows if you've got kids or not kind of conversations. You know, how's your weekend? Not even listening for the answer. Stuff which happens in every group in the world. But actually committed listening, you know, then the level of connection within that group goes up. Now, that's more likely to happen if you're at an art gallery or, you know, dragging yourself through under barbed wire on some military course or crossing some mountains or visiting the graves in Normandy or whatever it is that you do that allows that kind of level of human connection, sideways level of human connection to happen. You know, you don't need to overdo it, but it can be a very powerful thing. And as you say, it's not straight away that you notice the difference. It's on Boxing Day, you know. It's when the days are short and the injuries have mounted up and you're losing and time's tough and the cracks are starting to show. That's when the cohesion and the common cause really kicks in, early days. And also, my final thing on that is also, if you go through a process where you are putting people through a yomping or a, you know, adversity kind of thing,
yeah,
it's also a fantastic time to talk about values and purpose and philosophy and who we are for each other and what we can hold each other to account for. And some of those more teamship questions. And if you bank them in the preseason, let's say, you know, if you do that in the preseason, it may not come up till December, but in December they'll matter.
Yeah.
And I think the final key to it is it's a conversation that you're going to make sure it was the player's idea. You know, it's very easy to try to get everyone to salute a PowerPoint presentation.
Sure.
But Wayne Smith, a former All Blacks coach, is now working with the New Zealand women's rugby. There's a great line where he says, people rise to a challenge if it's their challenge. You know, people rise to a challenge if it's their challenge. How do you create that distributed leadership model, that idea that in rugby, they say one captain but 15 leaders? You know, so there is a sense of ownership within the group, within the team. I think Rio Ferdinand once said, you know, footballers are like wildebeests. We're led from watering hole to watering hole. Now, if you want leaders on the field, decision makers on the field, but you're creating a culture in which everybody's kind of, you know, disempowered or almost treated as infants, you're not going to get, you can't have both. I think the culture off the field, the level of decision making and ownership and responsibility is directly reflected to the kind of quality of decision making that happens on the paddock, on the pitch. My metaphor for that or analogy for that is the Battle of Trafalgar and Lord Nelson, great British naval hero. Trafalgar, previously in naval warfare, the two lines of ships would line up beside each other and blast the shit out of each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sideways.
And then, okay, I'm allowed to swear, blast the shit out of each other and then move on. And it was a war of attrition. What Nelson did is sailed his ships directly into the enemy and created chaos. Now, he could do that not because it was a whimsical tactical decision at the time, but because he created a culture that for years had emphasized agility and ability and responsibility of the individual commander to take it and to capitalize on chaos. So as both a real example of it, but as a metaphor, if you're busy saying, that the only decision you have to make as a footballer is which car to drive in and which wash bag to pack. You know, I say wash bags because I've always wondered why not just leave one at work.
Well, I understand. You can see them with a
small pocket. You know, got to do something, you know. But if that's all a young man or woman is in charge of in their life, you know, and in the bigger clubs, then you're creating a zone of learned helplessness and entitlement.
Yeah.
And that's not a good place for any young human being to be in. Really, surely, almost anthropologically, our role as leaders is to prepare the next generation. And preparing the next generation means giving them responsibility. It means holding them to account. It means teaching them or encouraging them to hold themselves to account. And so a lot of those character questions, I think, I think it sometimes becomes a bigger question, why it becomes a better question for coaches, managers to be asking, what's my human legacy here, as well as what's my kind of win rate, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Now,
the industry conspires against that because it's very results-oriented. You know, your shelf life is short if you're not getting the runs and all of that. But, and you know, you can see it with, I don't know, Jurgen Klopp at Liverpool. You know, there's a focus on that community and on
identity
and identity and leadership that is, and ownership that is beyond the structure, if you like. Yeah. And it's very powerful. You know, it's very, very powerful. And, you know, you could probably look at all the great dynasty teams and whether that's in all sports, whether that's, I don't know, the Patriots, you know, in the NFL or the Chicago Bulls, you know, they all had that something that they all had equity in that team in a way that was exceptional, I think. Sorry, I'm giving very long answers.
That's fine, because I'm taking a lot of things out. Because
more of a talk, but there you go.
It's fine. Because it got me thinking why you were saying, okay, let's take the example of the footballer with his small Gucci bag walking up to the club.
Yeah.
It got me thinking, it's also a little bit, it's in my opinion, it's two ways. Because we have the tendency to make life as easy as possible, both for the top but also for youth. I think it's even a Western world culture. Okay, kids shouldn't fall, kids don't have to carry their own bags. We take care of literally everything.
Yeah.
My kid says, I want a new Pokemon. Can we just buy it? They think everything is just there.
Yeah.
So it's also a little bit, how do we treat?
I think this comes back to your kind of your values and your principles. If you take the All Blacks, for instance, case study, I looked at it in legacy, you know, they sweep the sheds. You know, one of the most famous stories I think that came out of the book is that you've got the world's best, you know, most famous rugby players after a test match. You know, they're not grabbing their bags and getting everyone else to take care of them. They take care of business. And they do it very deliberately because, and it comes back, I think, to that win after winning thing. You know, that if you, there's a phrase that they used in the team or one of the guys used in the team, which is, you know, success is a terrible teacher. You know, success, you know, teaches you to be arrogant. It teaches you to think that it's just going to happen for you. You know, it maybe stops you, if you get a bit arrogant, it stops you preparing in the way you used to prepare. You know, you maybe take a few corners, sleep in a little bit, not work quite as hard. You know, all of those small incremental, the opposite of marginal gains, whatever that is, you know, the sort of slippage.
Yeah.
But if you're humble, if you think no one owes you anything, if you're tidying up after yourself, not expecting, you know, you're getting your own bags from the bus, from the coach, cleaning your own boots, the old boot room kind of ideas, then your head is in the right place to compete because no one owes you anything. Everything, your success is only going to come from your efforts. And that's got to be a powerful place to stand.
Yeah.
So, you know, if somebody's paying your phone bills and leasing your car and booking your holiday tickets, and when you turn up at the front gate of your brand new training enclosure and there's somebody with a list of exactly what you're going to do for the day, including what you're going to eat, and you're giving a sleep schedule, and they keep your passport for you because it's easier that way.
You don't lose it.
Then, so you don't lose it. I mean, maybe keep the passports, but, you know, it makes it easier to get a team overseas. But what are you doing to that human being, to that adult? What you're doing is you're taking away leadership. You're taking away responsibility. And, you know, the number one key factor in any high-performing team, you know, and this is why, you know, why in the military and the sort of special force kind of outfit, which I think if you can compare elite with elite, if you like, that idea of accountability and responsibility is absolutely fundamental. You are what you say, you do what you say. You say what you do what you say. You own it. Put your hand up. You know, you sweep the sheds. You take care of business. You clean your own weaponry in the military. You know, no one does it for you because it's up to you. And that's for a very specific reason, because it keeps your head in the game. Because nothing is going to happen without effort and by chance and because it's somehow owed to you. And that, I think, is the problem. And it's possibly a generational issue at the moment. Because instant gratification and, you know, social media and, you know, I want my Pop-Tart now and Upper Pops kind of thing has made, as you say, you know, the supermarkets are filled of product innovations that just make life easier. That's what we want. We want to build less glucose, burn less glucose. So the question is, I think from a coaching thing, is not what's easy, but what's right. And having conversations like this about why we're not going to, you know, hold your passport, why you're going to be responsible for it. And the smart teams create small rituals that create that ownership. The All Blacks very deliberately put the sweeping the sheds into the agenda. That was a designed ritual and it happened organically, but it was designed, designed ritual, because it was like, yeah, no, that's the right thing to do. We'll go back to what would happen at a club game, you know, amateur club game. We'll just do it that way because it's the right way to do it. So it's a very conscious idea of what particular rituals will do in terms of setting the mindset to create an optimum performance environment. So it's not by accident, I think, is my final point.
No, I understand. Yeah, and at the same time, I think we also have to look. So let's take the principles that you are sharing and the principles that are key to success, but also see how we can implement that into the current generation. For example, because one of the men's U17 national team coach of the Netherlands, he was also, okay, the goal only works, or the goal setting only works when it is a goal of everybody. But yeah, he's working with 17-year-olds and they are watching to a screen for like 12 hours a day. And in the meantime, they train. Yeah. So he had a session where the team could literally WhatsApp their personal goals to one guy.
Yeah. Well, exactly.
Bring them together. And then, okay, this is what you send me. And then you kind of take the new technical
analog and digital. You know, sure. How do you balance the two? I think exactly. And I think, you know, there is engagement. They just happen to be engaged through a different medium.
Yeah, and these kids are highly smart as well. They know everything.
Yeah, you know, it's a different, and the ability to kind of, you know, so smart storytelling solutions, I think. And, you know, I'm a massive proponent of, you know, of storytelling, of the power, and storytelling is almost, it's such a broad term, it's almost meaningless. But you go, how do you create a narrative from what everybody is telling you. You know, I think one of the real skills, it's like narrative judo. It's like you listen to what everyone's saying and you turn that into a story that encapsulates what everybody stands for. So again, we talk, you know, you might talk a preseason and you might get a group together, let's say a youth team together, and you might go, listen, you know, I mean, you think about the theming that the Chicago Bulls did.
Yeah, yeah, I was thinking that as well.
The Last Dance.
Yeah.
It's called The Last Dance, and the documentary, you know, for those of you who haven't seen it, I'm sure most people have. Well,
then you've missed something completely.
You know, but that idea of theming that is and what was significant about that is that it recognized the fact that this was the last chance. Last dance, last chance. This is the last time we're going to look at each other across the court. It's the last time we might get to the playoffs. This is the last time. And that gave it that meaning and that significance that maybe when you're coming to your sixth and you're getting a little bit old, might drift away. You think about somebody like Doc Rivers, who coached, came into the Boston Celtics and the NBA, and Boston had won, I think they'd won at that point something like 16 or 19 pennants over the course, the most successful team in the competition, but they hadn't won for 15 or 16 years. And the next day the team came into the training courts and all the pennants were laid up above the court and spotlit. Right. And the next day the players came into the courts and one of the spotlights had been shifted to the blank place where the next pennant would go.
Yeah.
How do you shift the story?
Yeah.
He also brilliantly again, I think it was the same season. They were early in the season. They were playing the Lakers, so the Staples Center, where I think they knew the playoffs, the finals were going to be. I think I'm not quite sure how it worked. Anyway, he got everyone to give him $100 in the team, and he hid $100 in the locker room, the visitors' locker room. And he said, "Listen, unless we make the playoffs, you'll never see your money again." So again, another way of just focusing the mind, and there's a lot of studies been done on, you know, what we need as a group to focus ourselves on the same thing. Now, what you're looking for is what's called cognitive congruence. You know, we all think the same. We have the same idea of what that future is. Now, idea is a really interesting word because it means to see. And I think, you know, just one thing for your listeners to think about in terms of how they might frame a season. A lot of the time we frame things quite conceptually, but actually visually is where we really can see what happens. So the best example for me about how we communicate in that way, so the storytelling aspect is, if you imagine a business saying we want to be environmentally sustainable, right? Everybody who hears that will have a different picture of what being environmentally sustainable is.
Yeah.
But if we say, imagine a city filled with electric cars, we got one image.
Yeah.
Now, they might be Teslas or they might be something else, and they might be red and they might be green, but they're electric cars. That's what environmental sustainability means in that context. Now, a lot of the time we talk about we want to be a top five team. What does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, much better to be, you know, we want to, you know, hoist the cup at Wembley. You know, we want to stand on their stairs. We want to be on the podium. We want to slam three in against Newcastle. You know, we want to punch the back of that net. I mean, visual language that allows the entire group to see the same thing. And it sounds kind of simplistic, but I think it's beyond simplistic, and it goes into, you know, a simple, essential kind of truth that to be something, we first have to see it somehow. You know, I don't think there's anyone who's ever climbed Mount Everest without kind of having a picture of themselves standing there, planting a flag.
Yeah.
And most Oscar winners have probably made a speech in front of a mirror sometime.
A couple of times.
You know, we've all imagined scoring the winning goal in a World Cup final.
We still do.
And we still do. and one day it'll be true.
Yeah.
But and especially those visual ideas that almost become, I think there's almost a completion anxiety for humans to, once you've seen it, to have to be it. You know, and so, you know, if you think of Doc Rivers and $100 or that pennant on the wall, he's vividly creating a possibility for people collectively. And that's hugely, hugely powerful. And often it's not something that's deliberately done. And I think some of the kind of the basics of human community, not basics necessarily, it's sort of simple, sophisticated, but simple basics that really do drive human behavior. I think the more that we can understand and embrace that and tell those stories as coaches, then we're just increasing the marginal gains, really, towards an optimum situation.
Yeah. Coaches, sorry for the interruption, but besides the coaches room, I run another company called Football Tours. This is a full-service touring company, and we organize pre-season and winter training camps for professional football teams. We do this for both senior and youth teams, and we take care of everything. Hotel, training accommodation, friendly matches, whatever you need. Also, we give youth teams the opportunity to train at the best youth academies of the Netherlands. Academies like PSV, Feyenoord, AZ Alkmaar and the KNVB, you can train there with your team. So, if you are a professional coach, you need to organize your training camp. Or if you have a youth team and you want to train at the best facilities and the best academies of the Netherlands, go to footballtours.com. And now pay attention, tours is with a Z. So, footballtours.com. What I think is you're saying is also you make it much more, well, fun as well, because the way that you approach is, okay, yeah, we have to do all that work, and yes, you have to do your stretching, blah, blah, blah. But the goal is that you become that and that player, especially for youth. You become the player that can beat five players. You're going to be a star. You see yourself as, it's literally visualizing your dream.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so you can therefore live into it.
Yeah. And even as adults, we still need that.
Well, I think as adults, we need it just as much. Yeah. And I think there's, my wife is a psychologist, and part of her studies is around an idea called narrative foreclosure that we were talking about the other day, which is that idea that as human beings age, they might get to a point that their story is sort of finishing before its time. You know, and I think one of the things that indicates so strongly is how important the story is. How important the idea of the story is, the story that we're telling ourselves. And if you think of the All Blacks, you know, they talk about leaving the jersey in a better place.
Yeah.
And the jersey becomes the metaphor for all the stories that have always been have been told about that team. And always will, and what's your place in that bigger story? But also, a story is our personal identity. You know, it's our sense of self. Yeah. And so, if you can, you know, what we want on a really fundamental level is we want our story to be part of a bigger. We want to have a significant role in a story that's bigger than ourselves. Our story needs to be a good story as part of another story. And that's a hugely human desire. It's the desire within a family. You know, it's why you have photo albums. You know, it's why sometimes the holiday is better after you've had it than during it, because the story you can tell, remember that time we were late for the airport, the nightmare at the time, but it's a good story now.
It
creates connection, and it creates a sense of us and who we are and what we stand for. And sometimes that story. So Saracens Rugby Club, they one of their kind of underlying purpose is to kind of make, I can't remember their exact phrase, but it's kind of like make great memories together. And it's not about winning the European Cup. it's winning the European Cup would be a great memory together. And of course, they started to win European Cups.
Yeah.
Because actually, the team and who we are for each other and that collective story is so powerful in shaping all of the behaviors that you need to align in order to take your kind of collective potential to peak. And if you're able to create the environment that takes your collective potential to peak, an environment in which human beings flourish and become the best version of themselves, as Bill Walsh from the San Francisco 49ers said, you know, the score will take care of itself.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the, when you trust the process, that's the process, I think.
Yeah. Connects with Ajax, who always say we build for the future. And in the end, it will lead to great players and it will lead to results and in the end, but the process and the story is very,
you've got to do what you know somebody else's in the high performance podcast, you know, brilliant listening for those of you have come across
myself them. Yeah, sure.
One of the definitions they've played with is that the definition of high performance is something like, you know, doing the best that you can with what you've got in the time that you have, or words to that effect.
So it
comes back, I think, to that one of the first things I was talking about, which is you can talk about the big story, but sometimes the story is, you know, what can I do with what I've got? You know, with where I'm at, you know, how can I just do this and create this environment around myself to be the best that it can be? Because that's a controllable I can control. And if you keep doing that, you're building for the future. Yeah. You're increasing your probability of success. You're optimizing your immediate environment. And, you know, a lot of the time we look for the big answers, but sometimes it's, you know, your room, the coach's room, you know, that matters. Now, you haven't asked me what I was going to...
No, we just started ranting.
We just started ranting. So I'm going to answer that question. Do you want to ask me that question?
Yeah, for sure, because, everybody is listening knows already what's coming, but... You kind of blurred your office because we didn't.
I did. I thought it's a bit of a mess today.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Your environment, you know.
Maybe that says something about the way you work. I don't know.
Maybe. Control the controllables.
Yeah. But the for coaches, they have their magnet boards or videos, whatever. And you, as a consultant, one point consultant making a presentation, the other moment, maybe you're writing and you don't want too much deflection. Or what is. How does your office look? But what's the most important that you have there?
The most important thing in my office, I went through this because you warned me about this question.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, my first answer was sort of just a blank piece of paper. You know, for me, it begins with a blank piece of paper and something to work ideas on. But then I went, maybe it's not that. And then I went, maybe it's just the door.
Okay. Because it can close it
and I can create my space. But actually what I went for is I went for my waste paper basket, because I think one of the things as a writer and as a coach and as anything is the freedom to make mistakes, the freedom to be able to screw up a piece of paper and throw it away and start afresh. That it doesn't need to be perfect in the first moment. It's an iterative process of moving towards and of becoming. And I think that's incredibly true of writing. You know, your first draft is usually pretty poor.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to write until it's okay or decent.
Yeah.
Not crap. You know,
right through the writer's block.
Right through the thing. But I think that's the same as any new activity, any new skill. So I went for the waste paper basket as a sort of a metaphor for the fact that you've got to be free to make mistakes in order to innovate and move forward.
Don't worry. It creates the freedom to not matter about the first results.
Yeah. Just
start the process.
And keep working the problem. Exactly.
Okay. And are you a guy that throws the papers away then? Maybe that's why the room is blurred. I don't know.
Maybe it is. I can show you my room if you want. I don't. I tend to just, you know, it's just under the...
So you are a writer with a pen, not a digital writer? Or
I write my first drafts with a pen, yeah. I do that quite deliberately because it again, I think it comes down to the process, the big present, to words on a page. for me, I think is important. I think I'm more fluid, and I think I am more free, because as soon as I'm typing, I'm judging. So Hemingway said, write drunk but edit sober.
And
I think writing freehand allows me to write drunk metaphorically.
Yeah, I can understand.
You know, it's a bit freer. I can cross things out. I can just kind of just keep on going. I can put a little margin note in. But when I come to type that up, it starts to take a more rigid shape, and I want to keep it free for as long as I can.
Understand. I think for most coaches is the same. As you think about your game idea, or you just want to have a blank sheet of paper, you want to take lines, and then maybe when it's almost finished, you start maybe use some editing software, make a nice animation, whatever. Yeah,
exactly. You can pimp it up later, but it's really the mind map that matters. It's the thinking that matters. You know, and not the presentation. I think one of the unintended consequences, I think, of technology is that things are finished much more quickly, almost, or seem more thought through and finished, and therefore important, because the machine does it all for you.
Yeah.
And you know, you see that in, say, the design industry a lot. You know, if you can Google a couple of images and bang them together, the craft of design has become so easy, and the barrier to entry so low, that the real craft of it, where the brilliance begins, is doing it 50 times. And it's the same as anything. You know, you can teach a corner kick, or you can drill it. You can drill it. And it's the repetition and the nuance that you learn between the moments. That's where the learning takes place. And I think it's the same writing.
I think it's in everything.
Yeah, it's just that's how humans operate.
Yeah. Okay, and I'm going to ask you the last question as well.
Bookend. The last question is nominate a new guest. So my apologies to the three people I mentioned there, because I'm going to mention three. Dan Coyle is a writer who wrote The Culture Code and many books, and is a lovely guy. He's based in Cleveland and Alaska. He's done a lot of work with the Cleveland, now the Guardians, formerly the Indians, in baseball.
Okay. Yeah.
But he's a really interesting guy in culture.
Okay.
Another one is Owen Eastwood. Sorry, Owen, to nominate you, but there you go. He wrote a book called Belonging.
Okay.
And is a fellow Kiwi. And I just wanted to really plug Belonging as a book, because it's very beautiful.
Okay, good.
And it's really about a lot of the subjects we've talked about today.
Yeah, sure.
And the final is a guy called Jeremy Snape, who runs an outfit called Sporting Edge. Jeremy comes out of cricket and has some wonderful stories to tell about, particularly some of the work that he actually worked with Owen on some stuff around identity for the South African cricket team.
Very cool.
The Proteas, which again, though, you know, they all three kind of work in an area that is similar and related to what I do. So I'm gonna suggest and all of them are well worth a Google, is what.
Okay. Will do for sure. So yes. Gives me three books to read.
There you go. Yeah,
and then see what whoever we can bring on.
Yeah.
Okay, James. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, listen, it's an absolute privilege and an honor to have a chance to have a chat. And you know, there's one of my favorite Maori proverbs. So the Maori people of New Zealand is, you know, gather the good food and cast away the rubbish. I always thought of. So, you know, if there's anything useful here for people, then I hope that it is of use and you can kind of put it to play, and the rest just is a load of rubbish. So thank you very much for listening to my kind of deluge of words. So thank you.
The thing is, if you are eager to learn something, you're gonna find your one thing from this hour. For sure. Yeah, for sure. Good. So thank you very much, James, for this session. Good luck on your trip.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I enjoyed it very much.
All right, me too. Thank you very
much. Thanks. Thanks, James. Bye.
If you like this episode, share it with your colleagues, share it with friends, share it on social media, like, subscribe, do whatever you do best and help us grow. Because the bigger we are as a podcast, the bigger and the more inspirational names we can invite to inspire you. And do not forget to pick up your 14-day free trial at thecoachesroom.com. With your free trial, you have access to all our masterclasses, both the live ones and the on-demand ones. Coaches from top European academies share their knowledge and you can watch it. So go to thecoachesroom.com and pick up your 14-day free trial.